This is the Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. Today's podcast is part two of the Coffee and Tea episode with Nicole Whitecotton and Angie Barham. Nicole and Angie are both teachers here at Clayton Bradley Academy, and they're talking about how they use the model that Clayton Bradley uses in their classrooms, what it looks like in a third grade classroom for Angie and in an eighth grade classroom for Nicole, and different things that happen throughout our campus. So we now rejoin the podcast with Nicole Whitecotton and Angie Barham.
Finally, four, we're at academics. This is how we teach. We teach relationships, life skills, environment. And then we come into the teaching. We have some of the best specialists on this campus. Our teachers know what they're talking about. They know their content. And so we write our own curriculum. We have standards and expectations that are assigned as part of our grade. And we do that as a community. So in middle school, our community talks about what the middle school standards are going to happen in which grades. And we talk about what's most meaningful of those standards to be taught in sixth grade, seventh grade, and eighth grade. And as teachers, we have ownership of that. And then we create our curriculum around that. Our curriculum, there are so many facets to it, but we talked with Arielle about this, and we broke it down, and she and I even kind of had to like try to make this as relatable for both elementary and middle school and high school, because there are so many facets to the way we deliver these things, but this is a solid understanding of our curriculum. So the first thing, I'm actually going to let you talk about inquiry based before I go into it.
Sure. So you'll see up here that you have both inquiry based and project based. When you are younger, we'll go with the younger, when you're in the lower school. This is really hard to get to if you don't know how to do this. So we tend to operate more on inquiries. So small activities that build the knowledge where the kids are actually doing the work, so that when you do a project, they know how to put it together. And so that's kind of the difference between them. So for example, we were doing the continents, like I said. I put out balloons, red yarn for an equator. I had some shapes that looked like the continents they could use or not. Then they had to decide what resources do they need. Do they need to look it up on their iPad? Can they use the globe? Is a map going to work? Which they found out that didn't work as well when it was flat. And they had to position their continents in the southern hemisphere or the northern hemisphere, and they had to put them all on there, because we're working toward the standard that they can locate and identify the seven continents and the five oceans. So instead of me just going, okay, everybody write this here, then they figured out how to get it all on the balloon. Sometimes, I'm going to be honest, North America and Europe are just right together, and the Atlantic Ocean looks like the Mississippi River, but they know where they're going. It's not about perfection. So an inquiry is not about perfection, and it's really not even about producing a grade. It's about producing learning and connecting all of those together. So they did that one. Then they moved to a map, which they were able to work with. This time we're doing elephant sound in the ground. So they have a video to watch about elephants using sound. They have a book to read, and then they're writing back to me about what they learned about sound. So that's the difference. That's not really a project. That is an inquiry that is going to build knowledge to put that into a project. And that's more of where we operate down low in the lower school. And then you can do your projects in eighth grade with their 3-year-old
brains. Teamwork makes the dream work.
That's right.
And that's another, this is bonus material. Being on the same campus as all of the teachers, the parents too, but as the teachers of the kids that we get, we can communicate with them, and I communicate with the high school about how to best teach the kids that I have. And every year I talk to the teachers above me and I say, how did these kids do? Like, how are they doing this first quarter? Are there things I need to add to my curriculum in eighth grade to help the ninth grade teachers? That communication is so powerful. So in order to talk about these others, she's absolutely right. We need to know how to get a question or a problem, and the kids need to take ownership on how to solve it. That is what makes them lifelong learners, is to be able to give them those skills and to give them permission to learn. So many times in education, we see kids being shoveled information and they're not really learning how to learn. They're not processing, they're not doing critical thinking, they're not doing problem solving. And so we teach them to the best of our ability how to learn so that forever they can be lifelong learners, not just to pass the eighth grade or pass the third grade. So our project-based, we also use problem-based learning. So PBL can be either, but the problem-based learning is closer to an inquiry-based. They're given a problem. We do that in the sixth and seventh grade with science inquiries and things like that. Project-based, I use this huge national project called National History Day that's competitive, and they really learn how to start a project and then go through all of the steps to perfect that project. We use group discussion like Harkness in the upper school. They use it in their circle time and when they do their novel study discussions and things like that. Group discussion teaches them how to discuss things with each other, how to listen and respond. Oh, what an amazing life skill that is. Individualized instruction, we do small group instruction, we do one-on-one instruction. We want to make sure that your children are learning to master standards, not just make an A on a test. Learning to master standards. So whenever I have a standard in my social studies that says that students need to be able to analyze how people and groups affect change in their community, whenever I assess those things, I'm not looking for them to get the right answers on the test. I'm looking for them to demonstrate that they can see how the Sons of Liberty behaved in order to bring about the revolution, right? This is a group of people who had a problem, they did things, and they succeeded in creating the revolution, which created independence for our country, right? That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for them to see that series of events that connects. And so whenever my students get a grade for that, a 3 is like, you are getting it. You've got this. Going from a 3 to a 4 means that they're going above and beyond. They know, they can understand, they can demonstrate how to teach that concept. They understand it at a higher level, all of those things. But if you look at our rubrics, we are breaking it down. A 2 means that they've got a basic understanding. They've got basic knowledge of that. So just a little quick plug. As your kids get older and you start seeing numbers between 2s and 3s, please, please, please do not worry about that. Those are good numbers. That means they're growing. That means they're moving towards understanding and being able to master those skills. Fail in order to succeed. You learn more from failing than from succeeding the first time. If you fail and then do it again and succeed. So in upper school, that looks like reassessing. That looks like doing it again to demonstrate that you understand it better. Those kinds of things are, again, those skills needed in life. If we always just stopped whenever we failed and just moved on to the next thing, oh my gosh, it'd be chaos all the time. We have to keep trying. We have to keep working. And then being their experiences. We teach through the being there, getting those kids to imagine that they're in the jungle, but also by actually physically going places. We have the most supportive administration. They say, oh, you want to go do this? Great, let's make it happen. We'll do whatever it takes to make it happen. And that is powerful because when we can take kids to the place, take kids to the thing, take kids, we have people coming in and talking to our kids that are masters of their topics. All of those things give those kids multitudes of voices and experiences in order to hook all of that understanding and knowledge. You're first on this one.
Oh, I am. And I don't have any shaking statement on that because I do all that. But I just wanted to talk about, these are some of our small group inquiries that we're talking about. So you can see this one, they have to make, we do them in math, we do them in science, and all kinds of things. So this one, they have some choices of how to produce that polygon. I guess we did both quadrilaterals and all of them. And so they're making them on their geo boards. And there's always one way that when I taught first and second for 20 years, I taught that. And then I moved to third, is that third grade is I hold them a little bit more accountable. So there's always like something they recorded on or something that they produce, because we're really working on starting something and being able to finish it. That's so hard in third grade because they want to keep going. So these little projects like this is help us out. So we do that. Like I said, this one's math. We have some science ones. Our field study, this was to Sweetwater Valley Farms. And then the one that's not up here, because I'm always busy during that time, and when I was looking yesterday and the day before, like, I cannot believe I don't have a picture of Reading Workshop, or Reading Roundup is what we call it, because that is the huge piece of individualized instruction in our grade level that goes back to Ms. Bradley and myself when we taught first and second, and just trying to build something that we knew helped kids learn at their pace. So it's individualized. We use lots of different components to place them. And there are a bazillion books that they can read. So they have choice over that. Sometimes I even have them choice and level. But they are reading, I call it a tennis shoe level. So because work is expected independently from it. So when they go home, I always want them to read books that are harder and challenge themselves. But during this time, if you're expecting your child to do something independently, it needs to be that tennis shoe level where they can read it comfortably and then they can produce something. And in this case, we do writing. They know they don't have to finish one level. I move them all around, but there are the components of we practice fluency. I have signs for everything, by the way. So we do fluency by reading 5 minutes to two friends. That also gets the movement piece that we know is important for the brain. So those wiggly kids that it's really hard to sit and read and then write something, they are up and it's 5 minutes. But you're also learning how to be a good listener. They set their timer. When the person sits down, they say, I'm going to read to you about Jane Goodall. And so far, this is what I've read. And then at the end, they love this part. They get to ask the partner if one question to see if they were a great listener. So when we give the compliments, that's how they know if people were listening. And that gets you up and moving. And then there's a writing response. Writing is always individualized. It is the way to individualize anything because you have different expectations for different people based on what they're producing, and it can always be better. So it's just the relationship that you build in the beginning is what you're able to get from kids. So they know I love writing, so they know I'm always going to be pushing them on writing. So they have their writing response, then they sign up and they conference with me. So I'm able to say, let's say that I know we're doing text features right now. So I'm assessing all the time in that conference and I'm going like, oh, find a book in your glossary and show me where that, tell me what that means. Find a book, find the glossary in your book. What is your definition? Where did those words come from? Oh, show me one heading and what it taught you about the main idea. So I am talking the standards, they are producing it, and we are conferencing. So that is all individualized at whatever level. And they move, and I push, and I guide. And like I said, it's not just, we use Mobi. Mobi's great to give you a quick feedback of what they could possibly read. And then we also use Fontenot and Pinnell lower grades. And that gives you an idea where to start. But if you're looking at the child's reading, you want that writing to be a piece of it too, because I met plenty of good readers that could not write. But I've never met a good writer that could not read. It builds the phonics. It builds all of it. It builds recall. It builds memory. We know it's 100% of your brain works when you're writing. So that is a huge piece of that and a huge piece of individualizing. So, and I just wanted to say one thing about failure leads to success, because I just want my kids in my room to know this too. Failure does lead to success, but everything doesn't have to be hard. We don't want to walk into our jobs and be challenged from the moment we walk in until we leave. Sometimes we just like to be good at it. And it's okay to just be good at math. You don't always have to do a new math and it be so hard that you're not looking forward to it. That's how you build confidence. So you want to push them, but it's okay to be a good writer and just write what you're comfortable with. Math, I would say more, because writing we can always go. But math, we have so many great math smart kids, but they're like, oh, well, I can do two-digit multiplication in third. And that's awesome, and we want to provide that opportunity. But you know, if you come to school and you want to do the game, that single-digit multiplication, play the game. Play the game, build your skills. So failure does lead to success, but you don't always have to fail to learn, because having confidence in what you can do is huge. So I just like, I mean, I can't imagine walking in every day and you guys going, and today we're going to challenge you. I'd be like, okay, I'm done. 35 years, I took it.
So, is my brain dripping out my ear yet?
But those are the things that all of us in lower school really work on.
Awesome. So these are just some examples of things that I do in order to enhance and improve their learning capabilities. So in science and math in eighth grade, they do a roller coaster project. We actually take them to Dollywood, and we have two specialists. We have an engineer and a designer that talk to them about how they design roller coasters and the things that they need and the skills they need in order to do it. And then the kids come home and they do those marble roller coasters and they work in groups. And here's the kicker. They all have to know how to do the math, and they all have to know how, like, the scientific principles. And they're just eighth grade principles. But they also, on their team, they also have a marketer, they also have a budget analysis, and a designer, and then they have the engineer. And so on those teams, they each have their own job. And they design some of the, during roller coaster season, the upper school building down there, we have them lying down the hall because we have 44 eighth graders, so that's 11 projects. So they line down the hallway and they go into the cafe, and I mean, they are all over the place. And that's another thing. It's like, sometimes that kind of mess makes people uncomfortable, but they take a deep breath and they see that our kids are learning and growing with it. And they actually, they comment on the roller coasters. The lower kids want to see the progress. The ninth graders always come back and be like, man, this one's cooler than what I did last year. It is a constant growing process. The high schoolers talk about what they would have done different if they knew then what they know now, things like that. I mean, that is such a cool thing to be visible with your projects. That's the same thing with National History Day. I take kids all the way to Nationals every year, but every kid, even if they don't progress from the school level competition, every kid competes. Every kid presents and defends their research. Every kid does a product. And we get people from Maryville College, East Tennessee Historical Society, we get adults to come in and feed into them and judge them. And they come on campus, they do their judges' forms, they give them feedback. These are adults in the community that care about the future of these kids. If that's not encouraging to a bunch of eighth graders to have adults speak into the things that they did, these adults always praise them, always. I can't believe what you accomplished. I wasn't doing this stuff until I was in college. They're writing annotated bibliographies by the end of the year in eighth grade. And so all of those things, eighth graders can do that. And I think a lot of people are like, eighth graders can't do that. I'm not even going to push them to do it. But because it's a competition that has prizes, there are a lot of them are much more motivated to continue on. And even the kids that put a tie on, not wanting to go on to regionals, they don't care about moving on. They're not into the competition, but they put that tie on and they come in and they're wringing their hands and they're presenting and defending their work. It's lovely. It's a lovely thing to see. And then, of course, our Virginia trip, which I adore every year. If you got to see it this morning, those kids, they had such a blast this year. So we do ExploreVision, the genetics project, and we always let the kids reassess. If they get a grade that says that they're not mastering that, I have kids who'll get their response and they're like, can I rewrite this and bring it to you on Monday? I always have kids doing that. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Because when is learning ever done? It's never done. And I want them to care about that. And sometimes I go to them and I'm like, this is not good enough. Bring it to me Monday. You know, that kind of stuff. So, and it's also okay to let the kid be basic in that one standard because they're excelling in some other standards because we're not all masters of everything, right? It's about that grace in education and about feeding into teaching them how to learn is the most important thing. So I'm going to end with this. At Clayton Bradley Academy, we are dedicated to creating a student-centered, positive, and challenging environment where all students excel through critical thinking, problem-solving, collaboration, lifelong guidelines, and life skills. And that's who we are.
This has been the Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem-solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. If you'd like to find out more about our school, you can visit us on our webpage, www.claytonbradleyacademy.org, or find us on social media sites at Clayton Bradley Academy or at CBA STEM. We hope you have a wonderful day.